Check out We Are Cavan Football Podcast in association with McAvoy's Super Value, Virginia. Real food, real people. Try Super Value's own range in store today. Quality products at one third the price of branded labels. McAvoy's Super Value, Virginia. Supporting local. We Are Cavan Podcast. Because Cavan's not just a place, it's a people.
Very good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the McAvoy Super Value GAA podcast brought to you by We Are Cavan. When debating who Cavan's greatest ever footballer was, a name that will always rise up is Ray Carolan. I suppose growing up in the late 40s and early 50s and being a footballer, it's easy to understand just why a player of that era expected to win Ulster titles and expected to maybe win an All-Ireland or two. When looking ahead to the 150th anniversary of St. Patrick's College on the current site, it was coming up. I asked Ray, would he mind doing an interview with me to maybe promote the event a little bit, but also just to archive what a wonderful career he had and his view on it. And he told me that maybe in research of it, you can listen to this. So he sat down during COVID or maybe a little bit after COVID with former vice principal in St. Patrick's College, Patsy Lee, and recorded his memories of his football career. When I listened to it, I thought there's no way I can do as good a job as Patsy and Ray have done here. And they kindly agreed to allow us to broadcast this wonderful insight into the mind of one of Cavan's greatest ever footballers. Again, as I said, this was all to kind of bring a bit of attention to the past pupils of St. Pat's and anybody in the area. On March 16th coming, there is a celebratory mass in the cathedral. The bishop will be celebrating that mass at 11 a.m. To look back on 150 years of St. Patrick's College on its current site. And then after the mass out in St. Patrick's College, the old college at the front, there will be formal commemorative events where there'll be displays of photo archives, there'll be guest speakers and some videos. So all past pupils or past employees of St. Pat's, or even just people in the general area who are interested in the storied history of St. Pat's, that promises to be a great occasion on March 16th in Cavan. So without further ado, let's jump into that interview. Wonderful hearing the voice of Ray Carolan, and the interviewer is Patsy Lee.
Raymond Carolan, you became better known as Ray Carolan. You weren't always known as Ray?
No, I wasn't. I started playing county football with Cavan, and the commentators were commentating on the matches. They seemed to christen me Ray, and that stayed with me for the rest of my football career.
Well, Raymond or Ray was born in 1943, and because you've been so involved in football, people might think that you have great memories, even at 4 years of age, of the Polo Grounds. Do you remember anything about it?
Very little, really. I think that I was probably 4 years old at the time, and that time it was... We had the battery radio, which was kind of not every house had a radio at the time, but in our house we had the battery radio. And I always remember there was crowds inside the house, outside the house, when the windows opened, and there was seemed to be an awful lot of excitement. And all I can remember about that was the crowds. I didn't really know what was going on or the importance of the occasion at that time.
And you didn't know much about your future at that time. But 1952, we won the All-Ireland. Can you remember much about that?
Not really, no. When we're growing up, I suppose you hadn't the same communications as you would have now. And I wouldn't have been aware of Cavan as a team. I probably would have heard of, you know, famous names like, you know, Mick Higgins and Tony Tye and Victor Sherrock and Phil de Gunner Brady and Peter Donoghue. But they wouldn't have meant that much to me at that particular time. I wouldn't have been aware of the hero status that they had.
Cavan hasn't won an All-Ireland since 1952. You've been there going through the mill. Does it surprise you that we've never won an All-Ireland again?
Well, it certainly does, because we missed out, obviously, in the 60s. We had our opportunities at that particular time. But looking back now, you'd never, ever thought that, like, that after 69 that we wouldn't win another Ulster Championship until 1997, you know.
You grew up not on a football pitch, but on a farm, Ray. Tell us about your upbringing.
Yeah, well, life at that time was very simple, of course. We had, there was no electricity. Everybody, you know, my parents, they worked hard on the farm, and we were given jobs to do. You were never left idle. And if you were idle, you were told to go outside and not be. So we basically were on our go from early morning to late at night. We never would be sitting in the house or anything like that. You'd be out playing football or maybe out hunting after rabbits. Or we lived beside a lake as well, which kind of the land ran down to. So we'd spend a lot of time at the lake fishing as well.
Would you have listened to your parents talking about life in general or football or whatever?
Yeah, well, you would really. But I think that time, the parents, they nearly, you know, somebody came, they nearly sent you out like you were kind of a nuisance, and they got on with whatever it was. So we were probably kept pretty much in the dark about real life at the time. Like,
Well, you were on a farm. You had loads of room to kick football. Did you do any of it at the time?
Yeah, well, in the beginning, like we had, it was a rag football we had. Make up a football of rags and be kicking the ball around with a few of the neighbours and that. Like, and probably when I was 9 or 10, I think that we got a real football at that time. And I think that then, yeah, myself and my older brother Desi and my younger brother Matthias, we would be out in the field. We'd be kicking that ball all day long until come in to get something to eat and back out again. And, you know, then maybe we'd get some jobs to do. But after that, you'd be at the football again.
A lot of youngsters grew up with underage football or schools football. Did you have that experience?
No, underage football was probably only starting at that time. And there were organised, I think, under 14 championships. Started around that era when I was 12 or 10 or 11 or 12 or that. I played probably under 14 football, I think, it was an amalgamation of Mullagh and Killincare. Mm-hmm. And we had a team. And
where did you practice then?
Well, there was a field, they used to call it the Lawn. It was the upper end of the lake from where I lived. And Johnny Fox owned the Lawn. And it was a great place for all the people to gather, the young people to gather to kick football at that time. A lot of them, you know, now they probably even wouldn't put a boot on, but they all gathered there and they all took part and they all kicked the football, but one or two evenings a week and then on a Sunday. And like that time, we'd only ever won football. Like, there was, you know, ironically, when you think about it now, you know, the club, I think they'd won football. Each club had won football at the time. So it wasn't easy getting, you know, an opportunity to kick the ball even. Mm-hmm. Like, and I remember as a youngster, when the big lads would be playing, they'd put goals up maybe, they'd have coats maybe 7 yards apart, like, and they were the two goalposts.
Yes.
And they kicked the ball in and out. And when the ball went wide or out back at the back of the goals, you got a chance of getting the ball and kicking it back into them. Like, and that was as much as the opportunity that you got. And then I think, you know, when the maybe the stop for a break or whatever it'd be, and we get another chance.
The real footballers could.
Yeah, the real footballers would start playing football then. Like, and that was a kind of the way we started off initially.
You went into St. Pat's in 1957, Ray, and people saw you blossoming as a footballer there. But when you went in, had you been interested in football? Did you go watching the games, or what happened?
Not really. I just had an interest, I suppose, in playing sport. I never had an interest in. I wanted to be involved, you know. And even in St. Pat's, when I went in, that I was 14 years of age, I think. And I think the first year when the St. Pat's McCrory Cup team were playing their match down on the pitch, I was up on the handball alley playing handball, because in St. Pat's that time, if you're a first year, you never got an opportunity to play handball on the front alley. And it was the only opportunity that I had, that I got. So, I mean, you know, I just, while the team were playing down below, I didn't really think of the importance of it or who won or who lost.
So how did you get involved at McCrory level then?
Like everything else, we started kicking football like during the breaks in St. Pat's, like, and that time, you know, they'd be kicking the ball in and out from the goals. Like, and I think we had, you know, we'd only, you're only, again, the one thing, this thing now about we'd only ever won football. So, like, there was 20 guys outside kicking the ball into 20 guys in front of the goals, like, and your chances of getting a kick of the ball, I mean, you had to fight hard, like, to get a kick of the ball even, you know? And I think that the fact that I probably was, at that age, maybe, you know, bigger or maybe stronger than most of the other lads, you know, I was able to kind of push my way in through the crowd and developed a kind of a sense of being under the ball at the right time to get the ball.
Well, somebody saw potential in you. How did they get you involved then? Or who was it that was organising McCrory football at the time in St Pat's?
Well, I suppose the priest, Father Mallon, was, I mean, he was a great GA man in Cavan, and Father Gussie Layden was a Leitrim man. I mean, they were all very interested in football. And I got selected on the Ranifest team my second year. And I think, like, once I sort of got on the team then, I kind of seemed to develop a kind of, and I loved it. I loved the challenge, really. I think that was a big thing, like, and the opportunity to play on the team and to get away out of the college for a day out and to play football.
Of course, you were a boarder, which
it was a boarder. Yeah, at that time, I mean, you went in September and you got out at Christmas, and you went from Christmas, then you were there at Easter, and then from there from Easter until the summertime.
And it was a hard life.
It was a tough life. I often think it now, looking back on it, like, that if I hadn't played football, I mean, I would have found it very tough. The fact that I sort of played football and that, although I don't think that, I never felt that I got any benefits or got any, been treated any better because I was a footballer. I often thought St Pat's, it was a great place for keeping you grounded. If you ever thought you were going to think you were better than somebody else, they weren't long taking you back down to ground level. And I think it was really, it was great. It was, like, I never felt definitely any better than anybody else in St Pat's when I was playing football. It was just that you kind of felt like that you run the team, and I think on the Ranifest team, I played centre field. And, that, you know, playing centre field that time, you had a bigger influence on the game than you would have than any other player. Like, and so it was an important position to play. And I think then they, you know, the players around you expect you to go out and to get the ball and to get it into the forward. So there was an expectation there, and you had to live up to it.
So you had great success in 61 and 62. Do you have good memories of those McCrory wins?
Yeah, I mean, we played, yeah, the football, yeah, the McCrory Cup was great. Incidentally, the Ranifest, I was captain of the Ranifest team, I think, in my third year. And we got to the final. And myself and a good pal of mine, Jimmy Stafford, who was probably, we probably were the two best players on the team. But for some reason or other, we missed a music class before the tea at 4 o'clock in the evening. And the then president happened to be Father Gaffney, who later became Canon Gaffney. And anyway, we were marched up to his room, and he banned us from playing football for the rest of the year. So
the two team, best footballers probably at the time.
The team went off to play in the final and got beaten in the final. And
did he ever mention it to you, Ray?
Well, for ironically, maybe about years later, it wasn't that many years later either, in 71 or 72, which is probably about 10 years later maybe, I was a big grown-up boy at that stage, and I was on the Breffni Park Development Committee, and we were starting to build the new stand in Breffni Park. And during the winter time, we used to go out to different parishes, and we'd join up with somebody from the parish, and we'd go around the houses, and we'd collect them maybe £1 or £2 a house, and, you know, money was scarce that time. And I called up anyway to Kinlelick. We were going to do the Crushaloch area. And I met a really good GA man, Tom Dowd, who was an iconic GA man in Crushaloch. And so myself and Tom were heading around, and I said to Tom, we have to go up to see Canon Gaffney. And Tom says to me, you needn't be going up there, it'd be a waste of time. So I said, Tom, I have to go up as a matter of principle. So we went up and into Canon Gaffney and went into the house, and he said, he kind of said, usually says, what are you doing here? Or, you know. So I said, Canon, we are doing a big development in Breffni Park. You were collecting some money for Breffni Park. So, and he said, typical of the man that I knew very well, he said, well, the Cavan County Board didn't do much for football in St Pat's. And I said back to him, and I said, Cannon, you didn't do much for it either.
Point and made.
Tom Dowd was sitting over in a chair, and Tom got so red he couldn't understand. But it just was an opportunity for me to get my own back. We ended up leaving the house, and we got £10 for our trouble.
Your cheek paid off.
Yeah, so it did indeed, yeah. But going back to the St. Pat's, like, then I got, because I was suspended for that, I got, the suspension was lifted. Mm-hmm. So I got back to play with the McCrory Cup team my third year. That was in 1960, yeah.
And that would have been unusual to play in your third year, McCrory.
Well, for a little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably, yeah. I was playing centre half-back that year anyway. We got to the final that year, and I think we're beaten by Colmes and Newry. A lot of the team that year would have played on the county minor team. Mm. And the county minors got to the All-Ireland final that year and were beaten in the All-Ireland final, and I would have been a sub on that team in 1959. They left, they would have kind of been gone from St. Pat's after 59, but we had still a good nucleus of a team, and 66, in 60 then, we played St. Eunice Letterkenny, I think, in the final in 1960. And we would have, I think the Eunice were, seemed to be favourites at the particular time, but we beat them by probably 6 or 7 points, I think, at that time, you know.
McCrory Cup Final, 1961. The Irish Independent reports as follows. St. Pat's success was built on the brilliance of Ray Carlin, who gave an exhibition of catching and kicking seldom seen at this level. He was undoubtedly man of the match. The Anglo-Celt reports, Cavan's big man of the match was their tireless midfielder, who played with tremendous dash and abandon all through the hour. The ease and sureness of his fielding, especially in the first half, completely bewildered the opposition in this sector of the field, and his high probing centres into the goal area had the St. Eunan's defenders under optimal pressure.
That kind of gave us obviously a big boost, and a lot of us were still in our fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
So we went on then to play St. Giles of Tuam in the Hogan Cup semi-final. And that game I remember well, because I was actually flued for the week in St. Pat's that year. Mm. And I was got up in a bed at 11 o'clock to go down to play. I think the match was in Longford against St. Giles. And I mean, I was after sort of playing, you know, quite well in the McCrory Cup and that. And I didn't do myself justice that day anyway. Mm-hmm. The team was overall didn't play well and we got beat.
It must have been hard to take as a young fella, like, that you didn't get an All-Ireland out of it in colleges.
No, I always had the attitude like that. I suppose I didn't like getting beaten, but if you went out and done your best and played your best and you got beaten, you know, there was no point in crying about it. I mean, that was it. Like, you just had to move on. And that mm-hmm. was sort of my attitude, like, that, you know, we'll have to have a go again. And
had you ambitions in those college days? Can you remember what you set yourself?
No, I never had any ambition to be on any team, Patsy. I just drifted on from one team onto another, and I don't know whether I ever expected to get on the team or not, but I just sort of drifted on. And, mm-hmm. you know, I loved, I suppose, well, it was a new challenge, I suppose, whatever team you got on. And then I think as well, I was selected to play with Cavan Seniors, I think, around that time too. And they were playing in the McKenna Cup final. I think it was March of the year, of that year they were doing my leaving. And Cavan were playing Down, who were All-Ireland champions 2 years running, in Breffni Park in the McKenna Cup match. And I was selected as a sub in that team. So I wouldn't know, have known any of the players and playing with Cavan or anything like that. But at half-time, I was put out centre-half back on that team. And I was actually playing on James McCartan, whom I would have heard of about wouldn't have meant that much to me. That was the way. I didn't really take that much note of different players.
But he had a tough reputation.
He had a tough reputation. I obviously didn't do very well because they didn't select me anymore that year.
1962 became a very special year for you.
Yeah, well, of course, it was my last year in St. Pat's. And we were in the McCrory Cup final in 62. And we had a good victory over ABCBS from Newry. ABCBS and Coleman's were very strong in football at that particular time. And you can remember that their senior team was after winning the first All-Ireland ever in 1959. So they were really, you know, they were really on a high, like in the colleges there at that time. So we beat them in the 62 final. And I mean, that to me, that was a great boost at that particular time. I think I remember.
McCrory Cup final 1962. St. Pat's again won the McCrory Cup. They defeated CBS Newry in a tough, rugged game at Ballybay by 2-11 to 2-6. Again, Ray Carlin, undoubtedly the greatest St. Pat's player of the modern era, was their star. The Anglo-Celt describes his display as follows. Rampant Carlin, revelling in the toughness of the going and fielding flawlessly, barged through the tackles with obvious enjoyment and plied his forwards with chances which they did not always use.
We went on to the semi-final and we're playing St. Jarlath again in the semi-final. Mm-hmm. And this year, again, you know, well, you certainly have more experience and certainly more confidence. I certainly had anyway, you mm-hmm. know. And but unfortunately, that day, the team overall didn't play well. I mean, we just we had a bad day, I think. You know, from the reports gather afterwards, I think we scored the goal. The score was golden, 3 points to whatever. We were not goal at six or whatever it was anyway. But I think I scored 2 of the 3 points that we got. And I think somebody said afterwards like this, if the St. Pat's forwards were in put over Swan Lake, they wouldn't kick the ball into the lake. That's as bad as it was. So obviously we would have been disappointed, you know, with the kind of, you know, that performance. But I personally, you know, would have been feeling, you know, full of confidence and would have hoped that coming back a second year that we would, you know, be capable of taking them on.
The Irish Independent singled out Ray Carlin. The Cavan towering midfielder did the work of two men. His catching and kicking were faultless. And when his defence was having a difficult time in the first half, he was at hand to help out, while he was often seen helping the forwards, scoring 3 points. A tribute was paid by James Walsh, who wrote the book The McCrory Cup. He wrote of Ray Carlin, one of the greatest of all McCrory Cup players.
Brady's Arva Limited, main dealers for Volkswagen cars and commercial vehicles, have been serving the needs of the motoring community in Cavan, Longford, Leitrim, Monaghan, Meath and the surrounding counties for over 50 years. A family-owned and family-run business, Brady's are famous for their long association with the GAA. If you're looking for a new or used car or commercial vehicle, check out Brady's Arva Limited. They provide an unrivaled sales and after-sales service and are open 6 days a week. Brady's Arva Limited. Get on the winning team today. See www.bradysarva.ie for more details.
Well, in 62, you must have had lots of confidence because you ended up in the junior county and the senior county.
As a result of that, I think there were Cavan juniors, myself and Jimmy Stafford and Pat Gaffney, who had played in the McCrory Cup, we were selected to play on the Cavan junior team that same year. We're still in St. Pat's. And I think we got to the Ulster final and we're playing down juniors in the Ulster final. And we beat them by a point, I think, that day, you know. And I didn't remember that much about it, funny, because it wasn't often we got out of St. Pat's to go off and away for a day to play football, you know. But we obviously got out and, you know, we got away.
Ulster Junior Final 1962. The Anglo-Celt reported. Cavan midfield section, where an ebullient Carlin was backed to the limit by a solid, consistent Lynch, soon took control, and from this point on Down were depending for their scores on an occasionally flashing breakout. Ray Carlin was right on his game from the very start at midfield, and his particular type of play, six parts classic football and four bulldozer, played havoc with Down's efforts throughout the hour. Okay, but 1962, I believe you had five different events that you wanted to remember.
In 62 then, kind of, you know, we had, won the McRory Cup. And, of course, then after my leaving, we went on to play with, I was selected to play with Cavan and the senior team. And the first match, I think, was a memorable match for a lot of reasons. We played Armagh in Breffni Park in the first round.
Cavan versus Armagh, first round, senior championship, 1962. This was Ray Carlin's first championship match. The report in the Anglo-Celt read as follows. Tops at midfield. The midfield advantage was all Cavan's, with Ray Carlin playing his first senior championship game. Played like a veteran Trojan. He repeatedly outfielded the opposition, and despite no small amount of bodily contact from various quarters, was still the strong man of the four midfielders at the end.
And I mean, you know, I never would have trained. I never trained with Cavan before talking out to play that day. I didn't know half of the players, mm-hmm. you know, so you talk about team building. Mm-hmm. But I was selected centre field along with Tom Lynch, who had played centre field along with me on the Cavan junior team. Mm-hmm. Actually, eight of us that played on the Cavan junior team went on to play on the senior team that year. Mm-hmm. So we were playing Armagh anyway, I think, and there was an invasion of the pitch, you know, after 20 minutes, and it was a dangerous place to be. I think if you had a blue jersey on you were in danger of getting, you know, a clock across the head or something like that. But I remember we kind of moving way back out the field, like, and kind of keeping an eye around in case somebody come up and give you a kick or a box or something like that. Yeah. That's as dangerous as it was. Yeah. And the match was started again, and again there was another invasion and it was stopped again. Like, and there was a few, I think that Jim McDonald got sent off that day. It was most unlike Jim to get sent off. I think he didn't like it either. He was annoyed over it, really, because Jim wasn't that type of player. But we beat Armagh. You know, and I always remember the guy who was playing on that day was a kind of Gene Larkin, and Gene Larkin would have been a star man at Armagh for 10 years, but he was probably 10 years older than I was. But I think I did pretty well on him that day.
Ulster's senior championship final, 1962, Cavan 3-6, Down 5 points. J.D. Hickey wrote in the Irish Independent, Carolan was unquestionably the man of the match. The 19-year-old youth from Cross held such a sway in his area that it appeared that he had the ball hypnotised. In a despairing effort to curb his rampaging, Down tried five men on him, Joe Lennon, Jarlett Carey, Tony Haddon, Sean O'Neill and P.J. McIlroy. But for all the switches achieved, they might never have been made, as it is doubtful if there was on the Down team of yesterday or any other day, a midfielder who could have stood up beside Carlin. Okay. Can you say, Ray, what made you different from other players at the time?
Well, I don't know. I loved the challenge. I think I loved the challenge. And I realised, you know, what I could do, you know, kind of early on, you know, and I was never afraid of any player or anybody else I went out to play against. And from the fact that, you know, when we were growing up and, as I say, kicking a ball in and out from the goals, I think that, you know, you had only one ball, you had 20 guys trying to get that ball. And I mean, I was one of those 20 guys. And I was kind of, was able to sort of get into the middle of where the ball was going to land. And you know, I obviously had good judgment and to be able to get that, you know. So later on, when I began playing, like, against the big boys, I never seen any guy in my way. I just always seen the ball. And I kind of got my eye on the ball and I just wanted to try and get there at the right time, you know. I realised that if I was fit, that I mean, I knew what I could do when I was fit.
Yeah,
and I kind of knew then what I should be doing when I wasn't fit.
I was just going to say to you, like, people didn't even concentrate on fitness apart from running around the field or a few sprints or whatever. How did you keep fit?
Well, the team normally would train maybe two nights a week or whatever, you know. But I think that after I left St. Pat's, I went to work in Dublin. And that time, they had the Rainbow Cup trials were on after Christmas in February or something like that, you know. And obviously, I had ambitions to get on the Rainbow Cup team or be picked anyway, so for a trial. So, I mean, after work in the evening, I'd be in Dublin on the Monday night, the Tuesday night, the Wednesday night, and the Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And it'd be a routine. I got a bicycle. I bought myself a bicycle, a little bicycle. And I'd tug out in the digs where I was staying, and I'd ride the bicycle out to the Phoenix Park. And I've put my overcoat over the togs mm-hmm. and the jersey. And where the Garda barracks is, where the headquarters of the Garda is in Phoenix Park, I'd leave my bicycle there and put the coat on it behind a tree. Now, it was different times that time.
It was safe.
It shouldn't be left there too long now. And I mean, I'd run right up the park, up to the Phoenix Park gates, up to Castleknock gates, right down to Island Bridge and back around. Do that a couple of times. I did that the four nights of the week while I was in Dublin. And it never sort of seemed to take too long. It just was a matter of habit what I got into. So then we'd be home on the Friday night and you'd start be playing on the Sunday. So I always trained four nights a week from Christmas until the championship was over, all through my career. I set myself two targets for the year. One was to be fit for the Railway Cup and the second was to be ready for the senior championship.
You probably found that you were fitter than a lot of other fellas then.
Probably. Well, I wanted to be fit. I'd be annoyed if players, somebody got the better of me and didn't play well because I wasn't fit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It could happen for some other reason, but I'd always kind of figured I'd give myself the best chance I could, and the only best chance I was. So when you were fit, like, everything happened. You know, your judgment was better. You know, you could move forward to a ball. I also got into the habit of trying never to be underneath the ball. I mean, I'd stay about 20 yards away from a ball when it's been kicked out. So I'd always stand back and I'd always run towards the ball, and I had good judgment, I think, and so I could get up for the ball and then keep the momentum going and break through the tackle with the ball. That was also helped by, you know, the bit of strength that I had as well, you know. Mm-hmm. I kind of could get through, so that was probably my strongest points. Like, I never wanted to get caught underneath the dropping ball, mm-hmm. because I mean, then somebody come in with a big fist behind you and fist it away from you. So, but when you're moving in fast to collect the ball, and they obviously, you know, had a great sense of a great catch, you know, when I got the ball, I never lost it. If I got a grip of the ball at all, I think I kind of was able to hold on to it. Like,
did that sort of tactic of moving in under the ball, did that help you at the throw-in in the old days?
You see, everything, it was different that time. That time, you see, the forwards, six forwards in the two centre field would line up for the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to always watch, because of that, the referee then, he would turn his back to yes. He'd throw the ball in.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always aware of this, and I always watched every referee, and I kind of knew what way the referee threw in the ball. And every referee threw in the ball the same way. He either threw it in short or he threw it in long.
Mm-hmm.
So if the guy that was refereeing was throwing the ball in short, I probably stayed maybe about three from the front.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he threw the ball, I mean, you know, maybe you'd back into the guys the opposite behind you and you give the fella in the front a little push, you had a good chance of getting the ball.
Yeah.
And I mean, if he was throwing the ball in long throw in, like, you'd be a bit made 2/3 away from the back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd know this before the game started, yeah, how the ref was going to throw the ball in. So you kind of gave yourself a better chance of being underneath the ball and a better chance of getting the throw in.
Those were your tactics, Ray. Were there team tactics in those days? Anyone telling you how they should play?
There wasn't really that much. I think that the idea was to get the ball up out the field and get it up the forward line and hope the forwards score. Yeah. I mean, that was simple, straightforward football. Like, but
yes.
So it was very predictable. I mean, that one of the things, especially if they for a centre fielder, like it was very predictable. So, I mean, again, I always watch the full backs used to always kick out the ball that time.
Yes.
But most of the full backs that kicked out the ball from the on the better teams anyway, I would have known them, and I'd known their style of play, their style of running up to a ball, and I'd have a very good idea of the direction it was going to take. So yes. I would be ready to move in on the ball, maybe before it even left the kicker's feet. Like. So I could run 20 yards either side and be in to start to collect the ball, you know. And you'd know the distance, like, that there were, you know, the guy in every, you know. Leo Murphy played with down. Leo Murphy put the, what was unusual, he made a hole in the little ground, in the ground, and he put the ball in the hole when he kicked the ball out.
Yeah.
And he kicked the ball out, and it went about, you know, 10 or 12 feet high, and it carried the same height all the way. And it was a lovely ball for a centre field man to kind of to judge and to get into at the right time. So that was one of the things. The other thing was that if, you know, a right full back got a ball, and he's right footed, and I mean, that time, he'd break out through the crowd with the ball and he'd give it a kick, and it was going to land like probably on the right hand side, about 60 yards away from, or down away from where he kicked it, 50 or 60 yards. So you'd be watching that and anticipating that. And the whole idea was never to be standing there waiting, but to be aware of the fact where the ball is going to drop.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be able to move in at the right time just when that ball is going to drop. So I would have been very conscious of all that, you know, anybody kicking a ball, you know, where was going to, the anticipation, like, what was going to happen, I think, like. And the other thing was that I would never, ever take my eye off the ball. I never, from the throw-in till the game was over, I nearly kept my eye on the ball all the time. Even after a ball went wide, or if I was in on the goal line,
maybe I was
running back out. You know, I'd be known to go out halfway and maybe run backwards the rest of the way out to make sure that
you knew
and be ready for what was going to happen. You know, just an awareness, a kind of, that you would have at that time.
You're watching a very different style of football. What do you make of it now, the comparison between the 60s and today?
It's it's not as tough anyway. I think one of the things about, you know, now, I go to matches and, you know, players go down very easy and that, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I was playing, I mean, it was a sign of weakness if somebody put you down. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you stayed on your feet and you didn't go down. Still, except you're being carried off, you didn't go down. Like, that was just, yeah. If somebody put you down, you know, you wouldn't give the opposition guy the satisfaction to sort of say, put you down. Like, that was just the way it was, you know.
Could you imagine yourself playing this tip-top that they do nowadays, you know, going back towards the goalie rather than going towards the forwards?
Well, if I was playing on a team now, I mean, I could not accept that forwards could not mark their six backs before the ball was kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
I could not accept that this guy is still only walking out and the ball has been kicked out to a man, a loose man. That, to me, I mean, I think I would create uproar if I was on a team and that was happening. Because I would be thinking, you have to force the goalkeeper who kicks the ball out, you have to force him to kick it out to the middle of the field. You know, and the only way you force him out is by your six forwards being glued to your six backs before that ball is kicked.
Was it important to you to mark your man? You know, you would hear people say, mark your man!
I never marked my man. I suppose maybe because of the fact that I was probably maybe a marked man in a way. So they were trying to select maybe somebody to kind of to mark me probably. So myself, and I played with centre field along with Tom Lynch for a good few years. And, you know, might think that Tom was Tom. I'm on the right, you're on the left. You know, that was it. Don't worry who's there. Just take whoever is there, you know. And, like, so it was up to the other guy to sort of to mark you, like. And I suppose you had a certain sense of freedom because you could move wherever you kind of you liked, and you hadn't to be looking around to see where your opposition player was. I mean, the only time, obviously, you marked them was when they had possession. I mean, you took them up straight away, you know. But until their possession, like, he was probably, you know, looking around to see where you were. Like, and if you kept moving a good bit, like, you kept him occupied trying to see where you were rather than, you know, you made it difficult for your opposite player, like, to kind of to play. Like, he was trying to mark you and trying to look to see where you were. So the idea was to keep moving as much as you could around the place, like, go behind him, in front of him, whatever it would be.
Looking back at Ray Carlin in those days, what do you think were your greatest assets?
Well, I think that obviously from I could obviously get off the ground, jump high off the ground for a ball. Mm-hmm. And if I got a grip of the ball, I tended to hold on to it. My catch was probably the thing that defined me playing football, you know. And my judgment. You know, and I say the judgment came with the fact of being fit, like, and the fact of continuously kicking long balls in and out in practice and things like that. You know, you developed a good sense of judgment.
Your positions were usually either centre field or half back. Which did you prefer?
Well, of course, yeah, I played most of my football centre field for Cavan. I think in 67. We had Tom Maguire had retired from Cavan. Tom was an icon with Cavan for a number of years, and he had retired. And Cavan, well, I was put back centre half back, you know, which kind of I didn't really agree with. But that time, you had very little say, and you never queried what the manager or the selectors or whoever done. You just never queried it, like, you know. But I kind of knew myself, like, that I would be a better asset to Cavan playing in the middle of the field than I would playing centre half back. And I always thought it was probably maybe the negative, little bit of negative thinking in Cavan that they put me back centre half, because there were other guys. If you're winning possession in the middle of the field, you didn't need centre half back, wasn't as important. So there was a lot of other guys that sort of could have played it. You know, we had Andy McCabe playing a cornerback, you know, would have made a good centre half. He was a good strong stopper, you know. And there were plenty of other guys, but anyway, I had to do what I was told, and I played centre half that year. Actually, I played, you know, quite well centre half, but I don't think that I contributed as much to the team as I would have had if I was centre field.
Can you recall? I'm sure it's very difficult, but the footballers that you remember best.
Yeah, well, I was very lucky to come on at a time when there was a good few good players playing with Cavan at that particular time. I mean, when I came on to the team in 62, I mean, you had a lot of household names. You had Gabriel Kelly, you had Tom Maguire, you had Jim McDonald, you had Tony Morris in the back line. You know, Tom Lynch was there with myself in the middle of the field. And I mean, the forward line was fellas like James Brady, a great football name from Arva. You know, Hugh Barney Donoghue from Virginia. Mm-hmm. Charlie Gallagher, of course. You had Seamus McMahon. And Jimmy Stafford, who came on as a forward with me from my college days as well. So, there was a lot of very good footballers. And then in 64, I mean, we got an addition of Peter Pritchard, who was, I mean, another great player, played again with me in St. Pat's in 62. John Joe Riley, of course, from Crushalagh, who was probably one of the best 40 yards men Cavan had, then or since. You had Phil Murray, of course, who was a great little corner forward. Frankie Kennedy and Jimmy O'Donnell. They all came on in the 64. And then kind of in 67, then you had, I mean, Jim McDonald and Tom Maguire, Hugh Barney Donoghue, James Brady, and I think Frankie Kennedy, they were all gone. So, I mean, in sort of came fellas like Andy McCabe and Pat Tinley and Linda McGowan and Brendan Mortham and Steve Duggan and Kevin McInerney and Michael Greenan. And, I mean, they were great players. Like, then in 1969, we had the addition of Paddy Lyons and Huey Newman and Gene Cusick onto the team. You know, so, I mean, while the team was changing, you know, there was a great selection of players throughout the 60s. Like, and I'd probably say 67, with, you know, that new influx of, you know, Pat Tinley and Enda McGowan and Steve Duggan and Hughie McInerney, they were a big addition to the team at that particular time. And I mean, they looking back on it now, probably that 67 team was probably the best sort of team that we had, I'd say. The best opportunity we had, maybe, of probably winning, you know, and allowing with it, like, you know. But it just didn't sort of happen, you know.
So, folks, that's part one of the Ray Carlin interview. I think you'll agree, a very unique insight into what it was like being a youngster growing up in the football world in Cavan in the 50s and 60s. And we will have part two on next week's show. So again, our thanks to Patsy Lee and to Ray Carlin for giving us this wonderful insight.
Yes, it was great. Yes, it was great. Yes, it was great stuff.
And Larry has put it over the bar.
It was hard, fast football after that.
You're in care of a nice, are ya?
Was there a feeling that might have been a chance for Cavan to come back into the big time?
And then McCabe, and it's over the lap, and Cavan are not buried yet.
Cavan doing all they could to hold their lead.
To Derek McDonald, what a goal! Oh, yes!
And over the bar, Vincent Cahill, what a day he is having!
Oh, this is brilliant by Cavan!
Dandy-legged farmers walking the roads near Virginia. Hurrah, yeah! Hurrah, yeah!